were discussing last night the general question of to what extent does the law, local law, whatever the law is, to what extent does the law override the halachas of Arav Simon of Nitzkei Shchenim? You can have cases, l'kula or l'chumra. You can have cases where the law is more restrictive, where the halacha would allow something and the law says you can't do it, or cases where the law is less restrictive, the law specifically allows something where the halacha wouldn't allow it. We discussed a little bit yesterday the question of Din Malchusa, when, you know, the general rules of when Din Malchusa is accepted by the Torah and supersedes the halacha when it doesn't. One of the things we talked about was minhag. Some poskim had various formulations of an idea that when that the law works indirectly, the law creates a custom, and the custom, minhag is always a powerful spar in Choshen Mishpat, minhag then determines what you do. So one additional exponent to that view, of that approach, is the Chazon Ish. So Chazon Ish has a general shita in his Keshkenim, we'll probably return to this in the future. Chazon Ish holds, and this is a position that's adopted by many of the Israeli poskim, you read their decisions on this Keshkenim, you see this a lot. Chazon Ish says, all the rules the Gemara gives, ultimately the fundamental principle is that a person is allowed to do things in his property which are considered normal aspects of living. You're not allowed to do things which are considered not normal behavior. So for example, the Israeli poskim will talk about don't make loud things before 7 o'clock, and don't do it between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, and don't do it after 11 o'clock. In the Gemara, you won't really find these distinctions much between day and night. But the Israeli poskim and the Chazon Ish work with this approach that whatever is considered normal living is mutter or more mutter. Whatever is considered a departure from the norm is less likely to be mutter. And the Chazon Ish therefore learns, we mentioned the Bach yesterday. The Bach says that when there was a law, even though bathrooms making private latrines in your property might be usher, the neighbor can object because it stinks, but the Bach says, but if the law says yes, then yes. So the way the Chazon Ish understands that, the law wasn't telling one neighbor you have to allow your neighbor. The law said everyone must have a private latrine. I assume that was a health thing. They didn't want everyone going to some kind of communal latrine because that would be bad for disease. So the law said people have to have their own. Homeowners are responsible for building private bathrooms. So the Chazon Ish says what that does, it doesn't directly affect Nitzkei Shchenim. What that does is that means that the normal way of residential construction, the normal mode of residential living now involves a private latrine. If that's normal, then that's no longer something that's prohibited based on Nitzkei Shchenim. So it's not that the law itself overrides the halacha, but the law can be can stimulate what's considered normal living, and that then determines in turn what the halacha should be. I want to discuss a few other aspects of the law and Nitzkei Shchenim tonight. Many of these scenarios are basically zoning issues. You want to build something, you need a variance, you need neighbors to sign off, different types of situations. So what is the halacha in these types of cases? Do neighbors have the right to either complain, to either show up at a planning meeting and say, we don't want this? What if the neighbors are actually asked directly by the government? Are you okay with this? Do you mind if your neighbor does this? Do they have to say, no, we don't mind? Even if they do, can they express their feelings? What is the halacha in these types of scenarios? So this is discussed by, not many, but by several relatively recent poskim. The one, you know, relatively classic tshuva is the Avnei Nezer. Avnei Nezer is actually an Arachayim. The case involved in his Arachayim tshuva is the case involved a shul. There was an incumbent shul. Somebody wanted to open up a new shul, and it was a parnasa issue. It was one of these scenarios where the person running the first shul was actually making a living off running the shul. I guess he took some of the donations, helped support him. So he was not happy with the second shul opening up. So when the second shul tried to open, the second shul apparently needed some kind of permit to open the shul. And the operator of the first shul petitioned the government not to grant it. I'm not sure on what basis, but he basically caused the government not to grant the permit to the second shul.
Can I just jump in? Things established religion in Europe. If you have permission to open a shul. Okay,
so that could have been what it was. He doesn't give a lot. He says the body was the. He gives the name of the body. I mean, I don't know, Yiddish.
Yeah,
or
they have something in Europe still.
Okay,
there.
So yeah. That could very well have been what it was. So the question was, after the fact, is this bad behavior? Is he a moser? You know, should we boycott the second shul? Like, what's the deal with someone who behaves like this? So the Avnei Nezer actually says, at least b'di'evad, Pesach Choshen, Rabbi Blau suggests that maybe l'chatchili shouldn't have done it, but at least b'di'evad he says that what he did was fine, what he did was okay, it was acceptable, and the model he brings a dispute between the Marik and the Beis Yosef, which we've discussed, I think, several times in the past, a very curious and somewhat problematic debate they had, actually in Kufman Vav, in the Sugyas of improper competition. In those days where you had to get a, forget religion, you had to get a permit to be to live in a city, they would carefully regulate how many Jews could live in a given city. So there were cases where there were 10 Jews living in a city, new Jews wanted to come in, the incumbent Jews didn't want that, usually for financial reasons. They had a monopoly on the business in the city, or they were worried that too many Jews would antagonize the Christian neighbors. Whatever it was, they had self-interested reasons for blocking new immigrants. You know, I've heard of that occasionally, about the incumbent residents, you know, have different reasons for blocking the immigrants. So they wanted to appeal to the government to convince them, to persuade them not to allow anyone else in. So the Marik says, no problem, they can absolutely do that. He says, even though, according to all the halachas and layachbar, and that we generally have an attitude of laissez-faire, if you go to Beis Din, you usually will not be able to prohibit someone else from competing with you, from moving in. That's all true, he says, in Beis Din. Beis Din, you have no right in halacha to demand that Beis Din enforce your incumbency, enforce your monopoly. However, he says, it's a free world, do whatever you want. If you can persuade the government to give you exclusive rights and block anyone else, That's your affair. That's perfectly fine. Kol dain lo dain hachi lav dainu. It's pashut. He says it's clear. It must be this way. The Beis Yosef disagrees. The Beis Yosef in his Beit Kabbayah says this sounds bizarre. He says the idea that we can drag the non-Jews in to settle our disputes, that we can, what is this? He says this is gangsters. Anyone can just use the temporal authority to push each other out. He says it doesn't make sense. And the Acharonim go back and forth on this. The Pesach Tshuva brings a number of shitas back forth both ways. Some of the Acharonim were sympathetic to the Beis Yosef. How can we just allow this kind of behavior? Some of them said, "Mi yavo acharei ha-melech." Marik was Rav Guvrei. The Acharonim come down on both sides of this dispute. So the Avnei Nezer says that one might argue. He says in a case that in this sort of scenario, he says where one side is using the government to deny access to the other side, it would be totally on the machlokas Marik and Beis Yosef. Then he says, really, he thinks this would be okay l'kuli alma. He says, in the case of the Marik, what happens? Somebody wants to move in. He doesn't need anybody. He doesn't need any permits. He simply wants to move into the city. But the government will make a decision whether to allow him or not. So if you're instigating the government to block him, to stop him from opening a business, to stop him from moving in, that's a problem. He says, here, the government has to have permits, like you were saying. And the government has to authorize any new construction. You want something from the government. It's not that the government is interfering with you. You want a permit from the government. You want the government to grant you something. It controls the houses of worship. You want something from the government. The government doesn't have to give it to you. So if your neighbor, if the old shul simply tells the government, don't give him a permit, it's the government's permits to grant or not as it sees fit. No one's taking anything away from you. You're simply telling the government not to give you something that you want. That, he says, is okay l'kuli alma, and therefore he is not a moser. As I mentioned earlier, the Pesach Choshen is not happy with this. He's not sure that Avnei Nezer actually means this in mutter l'chatchila. But l'chol hapachus b'dieved, he says, this is not an act of Mesira, and therefore, insofar in general, and I've seen contemporary authorities too invoke this Avnei Nezer and say, if you need a variance from the government, and someone else tells the government, don't give him the variance, the local, whatever it is, don't give him the variance, that is not an improper action, that's not any form of Mesira, that is fine.
I thought Mesira is only to jeopardize someone, have them go after your money or go after your...
So there are different aspects to Mesira. There's the kind of Mesira which is a rodef and you can kill, and it's Enlachel Golem Haba. That generally is when there's some danger, either direct or indirect, to life. There's the other aspect of Mesira that just asks you to do certain things because you're interfering with someone else's property. That's even without all those chumras, and the mere fact that you're illegitimately depriving somebody of property or even of rights, that's a kind of secondary form of Mesira. That's a different form of Mesira, which just means that you're simply unlawfully interfering with someone's property. So that, Avnei Nezer is saying, based on the Marik, that it's not your property that I'm interfering with. You're not a moser because I'm not taking anything away from you. I'm simply preventing you from getting something that you want from the government. But I'm not taking something away that you already have. I'm not depriving. It's not a taking of property that I'm taking something away from you. It's simply, we see that often as if the other post-communist in discussions in the Marik argue that if the government prevents you from using your property to its fullest extent, that's essentially deprivation of property, and that's a form of mazik. I'm taking something away from you. But the Avnei Nezer is arguing. Sorry?
Didn't get it yet.
Yeah, so that's Avnei Nezer's point. He says the Avnei Nezer touches up Machlokas, Marik, and Beis Yosef is basically this kind of modern legal question. Is this a taking? I'm taking something away that you have, or is it Manias HaRevach? I'm stopping you from getting something that you want. And in this case, he says, where you need the permit from the government, It's mutter lekulei alma because I'm simply stopping you from getting something you want from the government. It's theirs to give away or not, and therefore he argues that you haven't done anything wrong. Just I want to just cover one other aspect of this debate. This is also a very far-reaching question, which some contemporary posts can bring up, and it actually turns out to be a tshuva in the Sholem Eishiv. Sholem Eishiv discusses, last night we mentioned the Beis Yitzchak, who talks about a guy who wanted to have a shop that sold kerosene. There was a fire risk, and the government mandated blast doors of some sort. So the Sholem Eishiv was asked about a case, was consulted about a case. Somebody wanted to operate to open and operate a Brei House, Beis Reish Yud Yud Hey Vav Yud Zayin, which I'm assuming means what it sounds like, a brew house or a brewery of some sort involving the production of beer. Hard to know from context. The only information he tells us is that there was danger of fire. So some kind of equipment, boiling, distilling, something. I don't know how beer is produced exactly. Whatever it was some kind of commercial industrial facility in which there was some danger of fire. And he needed a variance of some sort. And in this case, it wasn't just that he had to have a variance. It was that the policy was, it seems from the context, that the government wouldn't give the permit unless the neighbors actually signed off and said, we are okay with this. So one of the neighbors told him, I'll only sign if you agree to pay me something, if you agree to compensate me for going along. So he did agree, and then he wanted to renege on the commitment. And the basic question was, this stance of the neighbor that he was unwilling to sign unless he was paid, is that a legitimate stance? And the Sholem Eishiv, as well as his rabbinic correspondent, both said yes, that that's a legitimate position to take. And one of their analysis, first of all, they say because there's genuine risk here. He doesn't say you'd be mechuyev to avoid al pi halacha, like the Beis Yitzchak also mentioned that both the law and al pi halacha, mazik can't do this. They mentioned there is danger here, so he's entitled to ask compensation for the risk. Moreover, he says, he brings a celebrated machlokas, the much discussed by the Achronim for 400 years, the halacha we pass in a son is yareish and a daughter is not, as long as whenever there are sons. Now the law typically awarded in Europe and much of the world with Achronim dealt with, the law typically gave the daughter some of the Yerusha. So the question arose, the poskim almost unanimously agree that the daughters are not allowed to invoke the law, assuming there's no will or anything, the daughters are not allowed to invoke the law to take Yerusha, any Yerusha away from the sons. And they can write a will, but assuming there was no will, the daughters can't invoke the law to deprive the male yarshim of property. However, in many cases, because of the involvement of the court and the law, the sons would be practically unable to take possession of the Yerusha, certainly if it was real estate and needed titles and stuff. The sons would, practically speaking, be unable to take possession unless the daughters cooperated and signed some kind of waiver. So the question arose, can the daughter say, look, we're not going to take the property because it's gzela, it's yours. We recognize it, I'll be turret, it's yours, we're not going to touch it. However, we're also not going to cooperate with you. We're not going to sign papers for you. If you want us to sign, cut us in, pay us something, and give us a share. Otherwise, we'll do nothing. We won't take the property, but we won't sign. So you'll be in trouble. You want our active cooperation, you pay us, you compensate us. This was a machlokas going back to the time of the Marit and the Pnei Moshe. This was a major debate. Many Gedolei Achronim said that the daughters have the right to demand compensation. Many said that they did not. The argument that they don't is basically Hashavas Aveda, Kofen Al Midas Dom. You don't lose anything by signing these papers. You can help somebody else come into property that's rightfully his. You have a Chiyuv to Yimei Sheva Aveda when there's no cost to you. It's Midas Dom for you not to sign, and therefore you have to do it. Other poskim held, no, you can't force this kind of active cooperation. Not sure I fully understand as far as why. Some of them argued there was some inconvenience to the girls by doing this, or other reasons why it didn't fall into the regular categories of Midas Dom and Hashavas Aveda. But in any event, this is kind of an unresolved machlokas. Later Achronim tell us the minhag was that the girls have the right to demand some kind of compensation. On the other hand, many poskim do say that they are obligated to sign if they are offered what the halacha deems to be fair compensation. Not sure how one defines fair in this context. I think I saw the figure of 10% as possibly a fair number. But the Sholem Eishiv invokes this debate as saying that he accepts the view that you can, he brings raya, that you can't force somebody to sign to cooperate with you without compensating him for his cooperation. So he says here too, insofar as you need, it's not just a question of someone else is invoking the government against you. You can't act without his cooperation. He doesn't have to cooperate unless you pay him. Therefore, he says the person is perfectly within his rights to ask for compensation for what he's doing. Befrat, he says, because there is danger. It's not a question of Midas Dom, because there is some element of danger in danger of fire. And therefore, he says, given this Ramah, it is reasonable, it is appropriate for the other people who need, who you have to sign, who are being asked to cooperate. They can ask for compensation, and you have to give it to them. And so these are cases kind of on the opposite spectrum. On the one hand, in the case where you can't move forward b'chlal without his cooperation, the Shalom Eshev and various contemporary achronim are telling us that he has the right to charge for that. In the case where we don't need your active cooperation, but on the other hand, you do need something from the government. You don't need anything from the neighbors, but you do need the government to grant you the right. And then the question is, can the neighbors tell the government, don't grant it? That's less clear. That's Avinezer who's telling you that you have the right to do that too, at least b'dieved, and you're not a moser for doing that. I saw this extended by at least one contemporary rabbi, affiliated with Tzohar, he says, a Rabbi Broner. He says, B'niyahu Broner, he was talking about a case where somebody built some kind of addition without a permit, as happens sometimes. The neighbors then filed a complaint and either got it taken down or got him fined. And he discusses whether that was acceptable or not. And he brings these various sources. He brings Avner Nezer, he brings these other sources into, and he tries to argue at length that it's mutter and there's no question of Mesira or non-Jews because it's Jewish and it's Israel and everything. So, you know, I don't think all the logic is so convincing, because again, it's certainly not like the Shalom Eshev's case where they're simply saying we're declining to cooperate without cutting us a deal. Here, they were actively interfering. I don't need your cooperation. I built my thing. I'm not asking anything from you. You're the one who's attacking me by reporting me. I think it's not even dumb to the Avnei Nezer. In the case of the Avnei Nezer, it seems like the case of Avnei Nezer was, practically speaking, he couldn't build the shul without a permit. It wasn't a case where I can build without any permits unless the government comes bothering me, which you're instigating. I'm fine. I'm happy. It sounds like he simply couldn't build without a government permit. It wasn't practical. He couldn't have gotten away with it. And the other guy was simply telling the government, don't grant him a permit. In a case where, as is often the case, nobody's inspecting your house on a daily basis, if you went ahead and built something, you know, it would be years, if anything, before they would ever catch up to you. They have no idea what's going on in your house, and halacha allows it, and you're simply coming in, telling the government, go look at what he's doing, go stop him, and the government listens to you, goes and inspects it and stops it. That case, I think, would be the biggest kiddush of all, to say that you have the right to do that. Again, that would be dependent on what we discussed yesterday. If you say, dina malchus adina, if you say that whatever the government says in this area controls, then even that might be mutter, which again, Rabbi Broner tries to argue that's also an issue of dina malchus adina, that whatever they say is binding, then maybe even that would be mutter. But again, that's far from pashut that dina malchus adina applies here, because the poskim are very reluctant to allow dina malchus adina to completely control relations between Jews, to allow dina malchus to just supersede din Torah. Some poskim say that it does, at least as we discussed, at least when it establishes a minhag or the rules of the road. Then yes, so in a case where it's unthinkable, everyone follows the rules, and you're just someone who's a lawless fellow, then maybe yes. But in a case, certainly, where the laws are not followed, enforced that consistently, are not followed that punctiliously, it's not so simple to say that you would have the right to report your neighbor for a zoning violation simply because once they find out, they're going to stop him, fine him, and make him dismantle it.